Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
If you were a college football fan and you didn't find last night's college football championship game exciting and entertaining and full of intrigue, then you're not a real college football fan. I suspect most of you are because the ratings were up 18% for the three college football playoffs, and the Alabama-Clemson games from the last 2 years were rated lower than the SEC championship game involving Alabama and Georgia. Now, I watched this game differently. I didn't watch it as an average college football fan. I watched it as a University of Georgia graduate hoping that UGA would come up with their first national championship since 1980, which was a couple of years before I enrolled at University of Georgia. But Alabama won the game, and Alabama won the game because their coach made the biggest halftime adjustment I have seen ever, and that's replacing a starting quarterback, Jalen Hurts, who was 25-2 over the last two seasons, for a freshman that I had never heard of, Tua Tagovailoa, who made all of the big plays for Alabama to bring them back from a 13-0 halftime deficit and a 20-7 lead for Georgia midway through the third quarter. I watched the game alone in my hotel room, and it was like riding a roller coaster. There were highs, there were lows, there were points when I was ready to say, this thing's going to be won by Georgia, or, oh no, they've just blown it and Alabama's going to win again. First quarter I thought was like a salad with no dressing. Alabama missed a field goal, and Georgia kind of gained control a little bit late in the first quarter, but the quarter ended nothing to nothing. Georgia was able to get a field goal right after the quarter changed and went to the second quarter. But I was worried. Georgia got two field goals in the second quarter. When you're playing Alabama, leaving it a one-score game with their defense, you always feel like their defense can score. I was very queasy and uneasy. But Georgia got a touchdown right before the end of the first half, led 13-0. I'm thinking, wow, great shape, Georgia. But you know what? It could be bigger. And then Alabama changes quarterbacks, and it got him a spark. It got him a touchdown. But the play that I thought was the biggest play of the game was after Georgia had gotten the long pass to take the 20-7 lead, Georgia forced an interception on the freshman quarterback, got the ball in Alabama territory. Another score is going to lock the game. And on the very next play, Jake Fromm's pass hits the helmet of an Alabama defender, and Alabama is able to intercept and then keep the ball and kind of steady their legs, and that allowed Alabama to really get back in the game. Again, I thought another score and the game was over. Then fast forward towards the end of the game, a 4th-and-4. How did that pass get snaked in the back of the end zone? I thought Georgia's going to knock that pass away and then win the football game. And then Alabama comes back almost like a boa constrictor at the end of the game, milking the timeout, and you could just see Alabama nailing a field goal. Slow, torturous death for Georgia. But then the kicker for Alabama misses the field goal about as badly as you've ever seen a kicker miss a field goal. And I'm thinking, Georgia's going to be saved again. And then Georgia has to hit a 51-yard field goal to take the lead. And that's one of the things about college overtime. Overtime is so difficult when you go first if you only get a field goal, because you're sitting there really, really tough, much like Oklahoma did the week before against Georgia. And then I think maybe my reaction to when Georgia got the sack on the first play for Alabama was, this game is going to be a win. Maybe the Georgia defense relaxed a little bit and allowed Tua to get the pass into the end zone and Georgia to fall. Chris, it was the biggest roller coaster ride I have ever done in a hotel room, sitting in a chair by myself. I'm very disappointed, but in the end, it was Nick Saban finding a way to get a 6th national title.
You good? You good?
I'm not good, but I'm done.
I don't really know what to do. I feel like I should probably go to Fresno and, like, give you a hug. Should I, like, kind of jab at you a little bit and get you to react a little bit more?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, I was disappointed in some things. I thought Georgia did not run Sony Michel enough. Michel's style, more of a change direction style, was much more effective than Chubb straight ahead, try to run through you and then run past you. I didn't think they ran him enough. Georgia didn't have a lot of field position late in the game, and they played very conservatively and kind of let Alabama hang around. But again, just some of the big plays made, the 4th down pass into the end zone for a touchdown for the tying score, and then the big play at the end. I mean, nobody really rushed him. He stepped up in the pocket. You couldn't draw up a better pass to the left side of the field.
It was. I can only imagine. That's put it that way. I can only imagine. I don't think it was as devastating. I was thinking about the Georgia fans who are also Atlanta Falcon fans, and thinking about how their last 11 months have gone. You've seen your teams in championship games, and you would know more than a lot of people. The fan bases maybe not overlap as much as you'd think for, you know, two teams in the same area, but there's some, right? There's some Georgia fans who are Falcons fans. And to see one team in the NFL blow a 28-3 lead, but it was, you know, to Tom Brady, I guess the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, I guess the Bill Belichick of college football, no doubt, is Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. And to see your, you know, Georgia squad blow, not a 28-3 lead, I guess, what was it, 20-7?
20-7 with 6 minutes and 47 seconds left. That's a good lead to blow. I mean, a pretty good size lead to blow. But sitting there watching the game, I never felt comfortable at two scores. Never. Never once felt comfortable at two scores. That's why I wanted the third, and I thought that when they threw the interception on about the Alabama 40 and Georgia got the football back, I thought that was the big window of opportunity. You at least get a field goal, and you stretch the lead to 23-7, but you throw an interception on your very next play on kind of a freaky ball off the helmet. I mean, that was good pass rush by Alabama. But, you know, a ball that hits somebody in the helmet could end up going to the ground, and all of a sudden, you know, you have second and 10 and you live to fight another day. Georgia got off to a good start. I thought they played ferociously. I thought they played hard. They did some of the right things. But, again, when you get chances against Alabama, you better count them for six instead of three.
I have analytical takes. I have big picture takes. I feel like this isn't the right time to do it. We can maybe do it coming up next. But I just want the emotion for you. Like, who was the first person that you called after the game? Like, who did you talk to anybody after? Like, take me through you, Bob Beeler, alone in a hotel room.
I talked to my wife, Teresa, because we had such a great time at the Rose Bowl. She was the first person that I talked to. And then because it was on the Eastern time zone, I only texted a few other people. You know, a couple people that were at the game and a couple people that I had gone to college with that, you know, were disappointed. Most of them said that, you know, when you look back at the season, that, you know, none of them expected to be in the championship game from the start of the year. But when you get there and you're doing so well, your expectations certainly change. I think there's a lot of disappointment. And like I said, for me, I ran the roller coaster. I thought there were times in the second half when there was, this is going to be a sure win to being, oh, my God, this is a sure loss. And then, as I said, my reaction when they got the sack to move the ball back to the 41 was that Alabama kicker is no way making a 51-yard field goal like Rodrigo Blankenship. I thought that was one of the biggest advantages for Georgia in the game was the field goal kicker. And I don't know whether the defense relaxed a little bit. The Alabama team picked on that one corner all night. It was Malcolm Parrish, and he was the guy that was beaten. They looked the safety off a little bit. But even though they looked the safety off, the corner was beaten by 5 yards on the play. Lack of communication and, again, disappointing way to lose because, you know, they were out there. Georgia had all the chips in front of them when the ball was back at the 41-yard line.
Are you superstitious? Did you make sure you sat in the same spot during the first half that you did in the second? And then when Bama was making their run, did you sit in a different spot?
No, I didn't. In a hotel room, there's not a lot of spots to sit. So that was not a problem or not even a concern. And I'm not superstitious. So when I watch a game, I'm not superstitious. But, no, it was just disappointing, Chris. I mean, you're right there. You're ahead. You think you got a chance to, you know, your school to get a national championship. But, boy, Alabama, I mean, I don't know too many people, number one, that would have somebody that they would be confident enough to make a change to. And second of all, to pull the trigger on it. And it didn't go great the first series or two. I give Saban credit for sticking with the quarterback because the first series wasn't overly good, and then he throws the interception. That's even after getting a score for Alabama. You know, there were times where he could have second-guessed himself and gone back to Hurts, and he never did.
Nick Saban's a wizard. And again, I have the big picture takes. I have something about Saban with this, but I just wanted to leave the floor open. If you have anything else you need to have a cathartic release, I'm leaving the floor open for you before I start to make you probably a little bit even more mad of some of my opinions from the game. You good?
All right. Well, I think the Big Ten officials didn't do Georgia any favors.
Missing a huge
face mask call. And I really don't know what they should have called on the punt that Georgia ended up blocking. If somebody moved, I think it should have been a do-over. I think it should have been a 5-yard penalty against Alabama, and because the play should have been blown dead with the Alabama player being called for the movement. Unless I'm mistaken on the rules, I don't think the play should have continued, and Georgia should have been able to have the block kick, unfortunately. But I thought there were some missed calls, and it seemed like the missed face mask and the missed calls certainly hurt Georgia a little more than they hurt Alabama. So that's my gripe about the officiating.
Yes, they got to blame the refs out of Bob. Are we going to blame the stadium? Who else can we blame that would seem completely outrageous? Now, you're probably more rational than a lot of Georgia fans or SEC fans would be after their team lost a championship to another squad in that conference. You're more controlled, you're calm, cool, and collected, but I still wish we could have had the camera footage of you in the room for those 3.5 hours of the game yesterday.
I didn't throw anything at the television, so I didn't want to have a bill from the Hilton Garden Inn saying you owe us for a new flat-screen TV in the room here. So
I wouldn't blame you if you, like, ordered room service champagne or something after, though, or something to just come. Maybe not champagne. That's more celebratory. Wine.
No, that would be an Alabama person. Yeah,
wine, alcohol, something. You need a little something, yeah. Something.
Drown my sorrows.
Exactly.
NFL playoffs and Super Bowl. I'm sure there'll be some other winners and losers to come that don't get expected to do it. Sports Radio, The Ticket, the place to hear all the games Saturday, 2:30. It'll be the Falcons. We'll see if they can keep going against the Eagles, and they'll be followed by the Titans and Patriots. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. is the start time for the doubleheader of Jacksonville and the Steelers, and also the Vikings and the Saints. If you're listening to the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl, it's right here on Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, 1350 a.m., The Ticket. When we come back, we'll get Chris's take on the championship game and also look at where Boise State finished in the college football polls, both AP and coaches. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Welcome back to Idaho Sports Talk, Bob and Chris. College football season is finally over. Boise State ends up both 22nd in the AP and the coaches poll. So congratulations to the Broncos winning the conference championship, winning a bowl game, and getting in the top 25 in both polls at the end of the season. Last night, an excruciating loss of the championship game for Georgia against Alabama. I gave my rant. I gave my opinions. Chris, the floor is yours. Don't make me too mad.
All right. I mean, there's nothing really to be, up in arms about an outrage as a college football fan over yesterday, because the first half, the snark was real. Like, it was as I worried that this championship game would be the low-scoring mess that the LSU and Alabama championship was a few years ago, regional game where two great defenses were facing off against each other. But then we got one of the better college football games that you could ask for in the second half. So first, I just want to credit your Georgia team, because I picked against them, and while I'm right about Alabama winning the game, and I'm no Alabama fan by any stretch, I don't like their dynasty. I think their dynasty is very boring, but if there was a team that was going to dethrone that dynasty, I would want them to have a lot more sizzle than your Georgia squad. I mean, they got some nice running backs, but this isn't like an Oregon Chip Kelly style, or this isn't Urban Meyer's Ohio State. This is still a run the ball and really meat and potatoes type of teams. But the fact is, Georgia gave us a really fun second half, and they made Alabama have to reach their ceiling in the second half. So, hey, I'm not hating on your Georgia squad at all. I thought they gave us what we deserved, a good championship game. So I just kind of congratulate your Georgia Bulldogs on at least showing up and giving us a fun contest. That being said, you brought up the coaching decision by Nick Saban to go with the backup quarterback in the second half. And, yo, that was about as gutsy of a decision in a championship moment that I can remember. But the more I thought about it, and I was thinking about it later in the night, well after the game, well after the celebration was concluded, I was kind of comparing it to Boise State and thinking, what was really the more courageous or bold or gutsy decision? Was it Nick Saban in the last game of the year benching a bona fide quarterback, somebody who was an SEC Offensive Player of the Year? Or was Coach Harsin deciding to bench Brett Rypien in the first game of the year when Boise State faced Troy? Was that more of a gutsy decision? Because when you think about it, Nick Saban, regardless of whether this decision worked or not, there's a period at the end of the sentence after the national championship game. You don't really have to live or manage that decision for the next handful of weeks like you would in week one. Like, so when Coach Saban was getting all this credit for a bold move with the quarterback in the final game of the year with a championship on the line, yeah, it's bold. But in a way, Coach Harsin had a quarterback decision that he made in game number one of the year, and that had an impact for every other game after, because now you have to manage perhaps a bruised ego from a starting quarterback through weeks 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, all the way going forward the rest of the season. So part of me was thinking maybe Nick Saban's getting a little too much credit for the gutsiness of it. Am I a little bit wrong on that?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. You're right. Week one, there's a lot more. I think Nick Saban went to the locker room at halftime and figured if we keep doing what we're doing, we're toast.
Exactly.
So I don't know that he had another choice.
Yeah.
Because Alabama's offense did absolutely zero in the first half. Their biggest gainer was Hurts, and he was the guy you took out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I mean, Boise State, you know, you were in the game with Troy. They weren't in the same position that that Alabama was in.
Yeah, I just thought
tight, much tighter. You could make a case for leaving somebody in. You're right.
Yeah.
Coach Harsin, and maybe he thought heading into the Troy game he was going to use Cozart more than he alluded to and he said. So maybe it was in his plan. Maybe not. Maybe it was something that, you know, came up on game one. But you're right. With game one, you have to live with it the rest of the season. That's a great take, Chris. And then you look at the end of the season, the season's going to change next year anyway. You know. You look at Georgia, Eason has already seemingly announced that he's transferring to Washington. That's the backup quarterback from the greater Seattle area that is was beaten out by Fromm after Eason was hurt. Fromm took over, and it was a Wally Pipp, Lou Gehrig situation, and sort of like Brett Rypien and Ryan Finley. So Eason's going to be gone. They've also got a red-hot recruit that's already enrolled at quarterback. So, you know, new season. I even saw a friend of mine from Georgia Tech tweet during the game when the switch was made that Jalen Hurts will be the starting quarterback at Tech in 2019 because, of course, they run the option. So you're right. When you go to a new season, all bets are off. You got new assistant coaches. Some schools might have a completely new head coach. Every season's different. So you're right. I think Saban had less to worry about other than in the second half. And I guess if the quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, is if he was terrible, you'd only be behind by a little more, right?
Exactly. Like, they're really, as much as it was like, yeah, championship stakes with this game, the fact that they were scoreless at halftime, they weren't, like, you really didn't have as much to lose in a way by making that decision as if you were to make it in week number one like Coach Harsin did. So in terms of riskiness and gutsiness, what Nick Saban did was a little bit gutsy, but let's not discredit what Coach Harsin did at the beginning of the year if we're going to talk quarterbacks and having to manage perhaps the egos of the most egotistical position in sports.
Well, and you look at both he and Fromm to a certain extent, although Fromm has played virtually the entire season as a true freshman, both quarterbacks took some bad sacks.
Oh, yeah. When he was rolling out to guys who were blocking, well, and he just.
Right. I mean, what was called, I wonder? I would think the majority would be right, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think the majority said it was a running play, and he just refused to hand it off, and they panicked and threw it. But this to my second point, which is almost a life lesson, and there were two life lessons in this game, and both on the Alabama side. Number one of them is having a second pitch. Really, it's a life lesson to have a backup plan that is completely different from plan number one. And I hear it all the time in the NFL, like, we want a backup quarterback that is like our starter because we want them to be able to execute our system, and the system is the most important thing, and we just need players to fit that. And I've always thought that was the wrong way to go about NFL quarterbacks or really anything. You should, number one, just want the biggest talent. But number two, there is some value in having a completely different pitch to go to the point where if the Jalen Hurts / power running game offense isn't working, that's just not the way that the ball is going to be moved 80 yards against Georgia, to have the option within your team to completely change your offensive style and then all of a sudden go four verts for a bunch of the game, because like half the plays that Tua was running was four verts. Yeah, four guys just run streak routes down the field and have them toss the ball up to one of those guys. And to have the ability to go to a second pitch, that like it reminds me of a baseball pitcher. If your fastball isn't working, but you're still able to get guys out with some cutters and some off speed and a slider, like Clayton Kershaw has so many different ways to get you out. That's why he's a great pitcher, not because he has one pitch that is just suddenly unhittable. It's because he has a bunch of different ways to get you out. And that's what Nick Saban sort of showed in the championship this year, and that's what you should strive for no matter what your career path is or what you're trying to accomplish in life. Have a lot of different ways where you can get to that goal. So I thought that was a pretty unique life lesson that Alabama showed us in the championship game. And then second on the list was how Jalen Hurts, after the game, handled everything. I thought that was very unique to him. I don't think a lot of people would be that pleasant, that upstanding, that respectful after the game. Like the media went to him. I think, what was it? One of the ESPN sideline people
they
went
had right
to him
after the game,
which I mean,
he was
incredible. Like
yeah.
I thought that was to be a bench quarterback in the national championship game when you played as poorly as you did in the first half. For him to be just that encouraging of the guy who's going out here and basically stealing his job, and I don't think Hurts is really ever going to get that thing back. I thought that was an incredible reflection of his personality and something that's envious throughout, I would say, for me personally. I don't know if I would have handled that moment that way. I don't know how many athletes I know that would have handled the moment that way. But I guess that's something unique about a championship, how, hey, they win the game, so I guess he gets to celebrate just like the rest of his teammates.
Going back to your first point, I don't think the NFL is likely to come up with plan B. I think the NFL is so locked into whatever they do, their quarterbacks are so similar. I think you're much more likely to have a plan B at the college level than you are at the NFL level. And maybe that's one of the problems with the NFL, that it's so homogenized, everything is so much the same, that I wouldn't see that. And, you know, 98% of the NFL teams having a plan B. They might have a backup player, but I think the game plan is still going to be the same.
And a plan B that you can't really anticipate. I know the Georgia coaching staff said after the game that they anticipated a switch at halftime because Hurts was struggling and they had the backup quarterback who was more of a pure thrower down the field vertical style, that Georgia anticipated it. But I wonder how much time they spent in practice, and there wasn't much film on Tua, except like, I know he played against like some blowouts. Fresno State was one of them where he got a chance to see the field, but you didn't really prepare for him, right? So to have a quarterback option who's certainly competent, but yet the defense hasn't prepared for, like, there is a lot of value in that.
So again, great job by Alabama. I congratulate them. But I guess the other life lesson is, Chris, the sun does come up the next morning.
Yeah, you still got to game the call. You still can't really sulk for too long. So you got to have that energy for the game tonight.
Yeah, I will. And I'm going to be scooting over to the shoot-around. I'll be back a little bit later on in the show. Want to remind everybody to hit Dave and Buster's for the football playoffs and register to win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Watch every game you can at Dave and Buster's this playoff season and register every visit. You must be present on Sunday, February 4th with Sports Radio, the ticket for the big game to win. Win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, a $300 credit at the exclusive MB Steakhouse, and a pair of VIP concert passes at the Joint at the Hard Rock. Join Caves and the Ticket Chick with Sports Radio, the ticket this Sunday at 2:30. For Minnesota and New Orleans. Up next, we've got a sports update, and Chris and Fish will take you through the next few. I'll be back after the shoot-around. Keep it tuned right here to Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Start the Ticket sports update with some basketball news. Boise State men's basketball look to redeem themselves after their loss to Wyoming. They'll wrap up their two-game road trip tonight. They'll take on Fresno State. Broncos lost both games last year to Fresno State, and they currently trail Nevada by one game in the Mountain West.
When you go to Fresno, it's tough. Boise State hasn't had a lot of success there, and you don't want one loss to turn into two. I've said before this trip that The Fresno game was the tougher of the road games that Boise State would have. You thought the Wyoming one would be more manageable. Fresno State would be the tough one. Well, when you lose the Wyoming one, doesn't really help you about Fresno State, which, again, 12-5, they're not bad. In fact, I think they're the team that's favored in this game. Then Boise State returns home against San Diego State, which isn't easy. So suddenly what was a smooth start to the year, it's funny how your perspective changes when you lose just one game. The thing you hope for as a Bronco fan is that Chandler Hutchison returns to his usual self. While he went to the free throw line quite a bit against Wyoming, he had probably his worst half of basketball in the second half of that game. Turned it over 5 times total. He was shot just 6-for-19. If he returns back to the Chandler that we're used to, and you would think Boise State could be able to handle Fresno State, but if he struggles, the team might.
I know we've been a lot of talk after our hot start here in Boise. Oh, maybe we can make the Mountain West a two-bid league. If we lose tonight, that dream's over. Boise State will need to win the conference title in the postseason tournament if we lose to Fresno State. Yeah. I hate to go from optimistic to bleak, but back-to-back losses to Wyoming, Fresno, unless we somehow go 16-2. Yeah, in conference, which I don't.
You
think
win the rest
happen.
Of them, and you only have 4 losses the entire
season. Okay,
yeah,
but if you go back to back, you think you're going to go 16-2?
It might be tough to do.
Exactly. So I think Boise State definitely needs to win this game tonight. Well, more Boise State news. Montel Cozart will play in the 2018 Spiral Tropical Bowl. That's January 14th. The game officially announced Cozart's participation today, becoming the 4th Bronco to play in the game and the first since 3, including Shane Williams Rhode, played in the first game back in 2015.
Interesting. I like bowls that are tropical. Tropical bowl. Does that have pineapples in it?
Yes.
I don't know.
What about the Popeyes tropical bowl? Would that make it better or worse?
If you got fried chicken and pineapple, I feel like all you're missing is watermelon. This is to live up to the ultimate stereotype.
I thought the new craze was chicken and waffles.
That's not new.
Do you know how many places I've gone that serve chicken and waffles that should not be serving chicken and waffles?
Roscoe's, man.
Like a
go
lot
to
of places.
Cali's.
I don't want to go to most of the, like, I'm not going to order chicken and waffles from some of these places, but.
Hope for the best for Montel Cozart. Recently, he had a social media post basically thanking his opportunity and reflecting a little bit back at Boise State. He represented the Broncos very well, did everything he was supposed to do, contributed a lot more than I think anybody thought he would this year, his only year. And you wish him nothing but the best.
And really, I think Alabama should thank Montel Cozart, right? Because I'm sure Nick Saban watched Boise State Troy, and that's when he realized it's okay to go to your backup if you think he's as good as your starter.
Mm-hmm. Coach Harsin's a trendsetter. He really
is. Coach Harsin is, and he should throw his own national parade for being a national champion.
I stand by what I said a few minutes ago. Coach Harsin's decision was gutsier than Coach Saban's decision. Coach Harsin, in game number one, going to the backup quarterback, benching an all-conference, all-Mountain West performer, it was more gutsy because that was game one. You have to live with that the entire rest of the season and manage that for game 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the whole rest of the way. You got to figure out how to manage that situation. Nick Saban, while it was gutsy to do it in the championship, it is the last game of the year, so you don't really have to deal with the ramifications from that. The next week when you play game number 2 of the year. Nah, his season's over. So Coach Harsin, real guts, the move he made in week 1. Saban, anybody could have done that.
Okay, I mean, it does help Saban out when the guy you're putting in is the 5-star number 1 dual threat quarterback.
Hey, good.
That makes it a little easier. You know, Montel Cozart, we just had his record from Kansas and his stats. So I agree with you. Speaking of college football, the final AP and coaches polls came out following Alabama's 26-23 win over Georgia. Self-proclaimed national champ UCF finished 6th in the AP poll, got four first-place votes there, 7th in the coaches poll, but no coaches thought they were the national champion. Boise State finished 22nd in both polls. They were 1 spot behind USF, and fellow Group of Five team Memphis came in at 25 and 24 in those polls respectively. So 4 Group of Five teams ranked in the final AP and coaches polls, which, as we've learned throughout the season, mean absolutely nothing.
It's improvement, and now there's the way too early rankings, too. I think we'll get to that a little bit later. What means more, the postseason rankings or the way too early next year's rankings? You can make a case that it might be the projected next year rankings that a lot of these websites come up with. UCF, should they feel a little salty about being number 6? I believe when Boise State was unbeaten in the 2 years, they finished better than 6 in the final poll. So, if you're UCF, I feel like there's a little bit of salt there, and you're still claiming yourself national champion, so you clearly don't care about rankings. You're a champion in your own mind, so you'll just roll with it. But I do think ranking them down to number six? Like, can't they be the top of the non-playoff teams?
I mean, they got four first place votes. They're the only team that got first place votes that weren't Alabama. That has to count for something.
Yeah, but somebody had them, like, behind Auburn.
Whoever did that, just did they, like, forget bowl season happened? They're just like, eh, you know, it's whatever.
We don't really need to play the games. I just have my opinions, and I'm not going to be dissuaded from what actually happens when they face each other on the field.
Yeah, no, that doesn't. On the field play doesn't matter, Chris. It's what you think you saw.
Yeah. Sad times.
Well, the biggest thing, the story of the day, it has nothing to do with national champions. It has to do with a game in Lithuania,
oh,
Chris.
Oh, boy.
The Ball brothers, LaMelo and LiAngelo, made their debut in an exhibition game. They combined for 29 points. LiAngelo had 19. No news if he had any official steals in this game. LaMelo had 10 and several assists. So they had 29 points and a 10-point exhibition win. It's done. Drafting 1-2. They're the best players I've seen all
Stop
year.
Stop it. You know, the Big Baller Classic or whatever they call
it. Yeah,
they
nest. The Lithuania team has now announced they have the Big Baller Classic. Will be 5 scrimmage games. This is just getting out of control, and I love every minute of it.
Out of control. I mean, I will say this. The thing got 1.1 million watches.
That's views. Impressive.
1.1 million from what I saw. And I saw some of it. So I was one of the
You were a statistic, yeah.
I was a statistic in this. He clearly is a noteworthy figure. And if you are a noteworthy figure, somebody who can compel you to watch a basketball game between, there's no good players in that basketball game. That Lithuanian basketball, no good players. None.
There's two.
No, there's
LiAngelo
none.
And LaMelo.
No. Okay. There's personalities in those games, those guys, and LaVar Ball to hype it up. And it got 1.1 million. I'm sorry, but that's relevant. Like, that is the definition of relevance. If you can get somebody to watch bad basketball, 1.1 million people to watch it, you have some kind of pull within society. And if you're an entertainer, sports is entertainment. And if you're a sports figure that provides entertainment for 1.1 million people, you should be covered. Like, that's how it works. So for the people who are arguing, well, he's not something that should be paid attention to. Well, people are paying attention to him. You can't ignore that. So when somebody is at the point where they can garner 1.1 million people to watch, they're covered like any other sports figure. And that's the LaVar Ball dilemma. You might not like it. You might not like him. You might not like the hype around him. But it's connecting.
Speaking of LaVar Ball, we talked yesterday how his BBB got an F from the original BBB, the Better Business Bureau. Well, LaVar Ball has a very simple explanation, Chris. And of course, how do we overlook this? LaVar Ball cited, one, that the holidays always slow down shipping. That's a check. I give him that. He also said, it's probably Nike and Adidas complaining about not getting their Big Baller merchandise.
What, he said he wasn't? Nike ordered it and Big Baller brand, the head up, LaVar, said we're not sending it to
him? No, like, he's just saying that holiday season slowed it down.
Okay.
And then Nike and Adidas were complaining because it's a competitor of theirs.
The conspiracy. Big Baller brand is not that established. I think Nike's too busy worrying about Adidas, and Adidas is worrying too much about Nike. And Under Armour fits somewhere into that picture. I ain't care about no Big Baller brand right now.
In addition, LaVar Ball, he doesn't care about the Better Business Bureau. He told Darren Novell that Yelp has replaced the Better Business Bureau.
Yeah, that's actually not that off, though. When you're looking for a product review, do you look at the Business Bureau or do you look at Yelp?
I don't even know the Business Bureau reviewed places. I just knew, like, they gave, like, grades, and I'm like, they cited in their commercial, we got an A from the Better Business Bureau. Like, I don't know what that means. I've never seen anyone not get an A until today.
He's not wrong, though. Like, when you're looking at a restaurant, like, you Google it, and then they have the Yelp reviews underneath. Don't you look at those?
Yeah, I do not go to the... Either that or Google reviews.
Is it Google reviews and Yelp, like, kind of merged together?
Sort of, yeah. So I wonder what Yelp gives the Big Baller brand.
You need to take a look at that. Come on, Fish. I expect you to know everything about LaVar and the
ratings. I try. I'm trying to figure out what hotel he's staying at in Lithuania. Maybe I'll give him a ring. Get the real scouting report on how they did.
Call his house. Yeah, his number.
He's at Lithuania. Who's going to answer?
I don't know.
Lonzo?
That's a good project. Lonzo, because he ain't staying with Luke Walton these days. We know that for sure. NFL playoffs, Super Bowl are always on Sports Radio The Ticket. Tune in Saturday, 2:30, as the Falcons try to make the Philly fans upset. Also, you got the Titans and the Patriots. That's also a game that's coming up at 6:15 on Saturday. Now, Sunday at 11 a.m., you got the Jaguars taking on the Steelers. And then you have the Saints and the Vikings. If you're listening to the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl, you're listening to Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. Up next, we got quick hits, including what did we learn from this John Gruden press conference that might be still going on because there's that much production within it. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Well, no, Bob. At least right now. So we got Fish instead, though. And how do the AP and coaches polls continue to prove to be useless?
Well, outside the fact that they no longer matter, and this has nothing to do with UCF, but a different group of five team, really two of them. The very bottom of the polls, you'll look, you'll see Memphis, who lost a home game in their bowl game to an Iowa State team that I think was 7-5, remain ranked. They dropped about six spots. Meanwhile, back in the receiving votes category, perhaps the best team in the group of five outside of Boise State, Florida Atlantic did not get ranked all year, despite their losses being at Wisconsin and to Buffalo and absolutely murdering whoever they played in the bowl game. How can you not rank Florida Atlantic, but you can rank Memphis, who lost at home?
Because they lost to Buffalo.
Buffalo, Iowa State. That'd probably be a 6-6 draw in overtime because we'd run out of fun.
And I don't know if Florida Atlantic beat anybody.
Did Memphis beat anybody? They lost to UCF twice. They lost to Iowa State. They beat UCLA. Does that count?
Yeah, it does. Congrats, UCLA.
Like what, like four? What were they, 6-2? 6-6, I mean? Come on. No. You got to rank Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin was probably the best follow on Twitter, by the way. He was like calling plays for both teams in the national championship, telling Alabama to go deep with Hurts, and then telling Georgia to run the ball more.
I feel like he is destined to used to be a Tony Romo. What is Lane Kiffin doing coaching? Just be a broadcaster.
He's making
be
FAU the most underrated group of five team now. They should be ranked 25th. If you didn't rank them in your ballot, you should have your vote removed.
If Lane Kiffin and LeVar Ball were in a burning building, which one of them are you saving?
Lane Kiffin.
Topic number two.
All right, Chris, what did you learn from the John Gruden press conference?
Number one, I learned that the Raiders like production. They had like this whole video presentation and they dim the lights and everything like that. So they're going to fit in very well when they get to Las Vegas, when they eventually make that move. Now, what did you learn from the press conference? Not much. You know, John Gruden's energetic, and he tried to sell the whole, you know, really excited to be here, y'all, Spider 2, Y Banana, and everything like that. So we know the John Gruden personality. It's the only newsworthy thing that I heard was that he's going to call plays. And he joked about having a no-trade clause. I didn't know if that was serious or not. I mean, he has been traded before, but he's calling plays. So that means that if they're struggling offensively and you're number one, you know who to blame.
I'm just going to miss him wearing shirts that have the FFCA, the Fired Football Coaches of America logo on it. Can he still wear that while he's coaching?
Is it the fired or fiery?
No, it's fired. Like he'd been fired.
Okay.
It was a joke on him being fired, despite, as you pointed out, being just as good as Jim Caldwell.
That's the thing. Jim Caldwell out here looking for work.
Jim Caldwell will never make $100 million in his life.
He ain't getting no $100 million contract. And John Gruden, basically the same resume. He out here got the job security that every coach dies for. Hey, if you can make it work, John Gruden, you can make it work.
Topic number three.
Why will an 8-team playoff never work?
Well, of course, now that the playoff's done, there's all the talk. Well, UCF should have got some kind of play-in. Well, six seems to be maybe the more popular. You get all the group of the conference champions, without have excluded national champ Alabama, plus a group of five. Some people say, let's go eight. We'll have the five champs, a group of five team, and then two wild cards. The problem is, that sets up a bracket that's going to be determined more by avoiding rematches than actually good games. Because if you look right now, what would you have it, the two wild cards? Ohio State and Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Ohio
USC.
State TCU? Ohio State Auburn?
Yeah, those are your teams. UCF.
Alabama, because technically they weren't a conference champion. We can't have Georgia play Auburn in the first round because we don't want that rematch. We can't have Alabama play Auburn because we don't want that rematch. So it's just a bracket determined by rematches. Eight teams will never work because you cannot have rematches in the playoffs from a game play. We learned that with Alabama LSU. Luckily, Alabama Georgia didn't play. That's why it will never work, Chris.
All right, you want to move on?
No, I thought you were positive.
I think eight won't work. No, it would work. I think it would work if you wanted to. And you could have rematches.
No, we don't want rematches.
We just had a rematch in the Mountain West Championship game and the world didn't end. Boise State and Fresno State played the week before. And then they played the next week.
You know how many people complain? You know how many people had to talk about that? We spent a whole week talking about how weird that is.
And guess what? The world didn't end. Boise State won a championship and everything else is good.
I bet you the Mountain West changed their schedule. I bet you the Mountain West got a lot of complaints.
But they're going to change their schedule, okay, so they don't play the last week. But that doesn't change the fact that they might play in the regular season and play in the championship.
Conference championships are different than the playoff. The playoff is supposed to be bringing every conference together, not having rematches of who played 2 weeks earlier in the conference championship game.
Now, when you start getting three matches, like in the playoff, which I guess could happen, right?
You could have
the third. And if you really don't like the fact that two teams from the same conference were playing for the championship, I think setting up an 18 bracket would actually increase the odds of that.
Yeah, exactly. So an 18 will never work. We'll stick with six.
We don't have six right now.
We'll move to six.
Okay.
Topic number four.
All right, Chris, what was the most underrated moment of the national title game?
All right, there's a couple. Now, number one, Kendrick Lamar at halftime. But did you notice how they pulled the okey-doke? I thought Kendrick Lamar would be playing inside a stadium.
No. I knew that wasn't going to happen because that's what they've announced. Like, that happened last year, I think, with Taylor Swift. It's really weird why they do it. It ruins the whole performance. But I knew that was going to happen because they've announced that all of the performers will be outside because they hate fun. They like to watch people freeze in Atlanta in January. I don't know.
Is there a rule like the bands have to play?
I think that is
the
rule.
Bands,
yeah, it's the bands, and then
have
if they
to
had
play,
the
and
bands and Kendrick Lamar, halftime gets too long, and this isn't the Super Bowl. That's their reasoning.
Yeah, but Kendrick Lamar is more entertaining than a band that isn't like Southern and Grambling. And
well, I did learn yesterday on Idaho Sports Talk that Alabama calls their band the Million Dollar Band. I want to hear a band that's worth $1 million play.
All right, then you probably don't need to hear Alabama's. Bethune-Cookman, I'm telling you.
That band might be worth a million dollars. That's their self-proposed nickname in Alabama.
All right, so that was an underrated part, the fact that Kendrick Lamar performed. They stuck him outside. He had to wear a heavy coat, and it didn't look like he was actually rapping. Kind of looked like he was just playing the track. But hey, it's cold outside.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
come on, man. You stuck him outside. You're not going to get the
real
deal.
He's got to walk around. You think he can walk around and sing without sounding out of breath?
It's going to be rough. Now, the most underrated parts happen to be on the Alabama sideline. Fish, did you see this linebacker? I think his name is Mekhi Brown. Tried to fight one of the coaches on Alabama's sideline. They got into like a little bit of a scuffle. This player was out here about to try to do the Percy Harvin allegedly and fight the coach.
I saw that. I don't know what do you do in that situation? You can't get rid of. You can't eject him, can you?
I think he made a tackle a little bit later on in the game, but
well, he had two.
He tried
tackles,
to fight
clearly.
The coach on the sideline of the national championship. Like, when, I know you're competitive. I know emotions get there. I mean, Darren College has told stories about things like this. But, man, in the national championship, to be on the sideline trying to fight your coach, that's crazy.
Well, Chris, you forgot one of the other underrated moments from Bradley Bozeman. Do you know who that is?
Who is that?
It's the Alabama center. He didn't score the game-winning touchdown, but he pulled up Ian Johnson. He proposed to his girlfriend after the victory.
Aww. Look at Ian Johnson being his friend set up.
At least he was involved in the final play since he's the center, but you didn't score. It's kind of weird. You're a center.
Yo, the most underrated part now I think about it. Yo, one of the coaches for Georgia had the best dance in the world when the missed field goal for Alabama at the end of regulation. He was out here like doing, he was in a club or something like that. All right. Up next, more perspective of the championship game. Chris Rankle, who covers Alabama for a TV station down there, joins us next on Sports Radio The Ticket. So there was a significant college football game last night over in Atlanta between two regional teams. Nobody outside of that region really cared.
What were they playing for, though?
They're playing for all the Tostitos.
Well, they can't be playing for the national champion. That's UCF, right?
Oh, UCF already won the national championship.
They already did.
This is the SEC title.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
There really wasn't any legit stakes. Nobody watched either. That's the thing. I mean, it's not like this set a record for ratings. It's not like ratings were up significantly for this game. I mean, it was two regional teams playing
in
a game
in
a region.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
That's kind of how it goes.
I had to watch the highlights later that night.
Exactly. You know, you tuned in a little after the game. And you, oh, okay, that team won. Or you checked Twitter. No, you probably watched what was a classic in Alabama winning in overtime in the championship. And Chris Rankle, who covers Alabama for WIAT-TV in Alabama, joins us on the phone. And Chris, you were at the game. How was the experience?
Well, I'll tell you, I remember this time last year, we were talking when I was still in Tampa, and you asked me where this game, that game ranked in my mind in all time. And I said, well, it's right up there with the Texas-USC Rose Bowl without Clemson. I was able to snatch away victory at the last second. I think this year's my top last year's game. It's been a few hours, and it might be even no sleep talking, but I still don't believe what we saw last night. That was an absolutely stunning and incredible game.
All right, to follow up with that, what about that was the most unbelievable to you?
I just think you look at what Alabama went through. And I know we followed them all through the season. We saw the injuries. We saw the ups and downs. But in that game was kind of a microcosm of what they've gone through all year. You have a couple guys go down. Your starting left tackle goes down with an injury. You're down 13-0 to a team that is just significantly beating you in the game. And you put in a true freshman who has not played significant snaps. Now, he did play in mop-up duty throughout the season. It's not like this was his first time on the field. But, I mean, the national championship down 13-0 with only a half to go of a team that is soundly beating you and able to will your team to come back to win, send it to overtime after another missed field goal. I mean, that could have been enough to sink a team. And then they're able to hang on and win the game. I think it just – you never saw any quit in Alabama. And when we talked to the players in the locker room and on the field afterward, they said when they went in half – down 13-0, they said, look, we lost pretty much our entire linebacking core this year. This was no big deal for us, and we said, we're not leaving here with another loss.
Chris Rankle joining us covers Alabama. Of course, the Crimson Tide, your champions, 26-23 over Georgia. And I need to know a little bit more about this backup quarterback, Tua, who just came in and in a way stole the show. Now, you cover the team. You've seen him in those mop-up duties. Was that expected? Was that something that we knew Alabama had up its sleeve?
What's funny about it, and first of all, I noticed you only said Tua.
Yeah, I ain't trying, man.
It's pronounced, it's Tungavailoa. I'll say that, Tungavailoa.
Okay, that's
I only know
manageable.
That I've had, you know, 6 months to learn it. But we knew at the beginning of the year, we had kind of heard that this incoming freshman was a different level. And there was a little bit of speculation. You know, Jalen was good last year, but he wasn't a phenomenal passer, like a guy who's going to go out and throw for 300 yards and six touchdowns or something ridiculous. But this Tua kid, I mean, you can look at his high school tape, was really good. And then you saw him in some of the mop-up duties, and the offense just seemed to click with him. And Nick Saban, he, you know what, to his credit, he stuck with Jalen Hurts through all of, you know, the fans were clamoring for it. And, you know, a lot of people were saying this offense and this of a passing attack, and Tua's the guy for that. But Jalen Hurts is a really, really good game manager, made a lot of good plays, and Saban was the first thing to say. He said, he told Jalen at halftime, look, we're not here without you. You have done so much for this football team. You deserve all the credit in the world. But I think we need a spark, and that's why I'm putting in Tua in the second half. I didn't know what to expect with him in the second half of the national championship game. I knew he was good. I knew he could make the throws. I was a little worried maybe the moment would be a little too big for him. I think the key play that won't get talked about enough is that 3rd and 7, when it looked like he was rolling around and it looked like he was sacked, and he somehow got out of it, made it a 10, 12-yard gain for first down. I think after that, he settled in, was able to make all the throws. But I'll tell you, as much as Nick Saban hates the word controversy, there's a quarterback controversy in Tuscaloosa right now because Tua is – he's the second coming at this point for Crimson Tide fans with what he did.
Now, Chris, speaking of that quarterback controversy, I know it's way too early. We haven't even had spring football, but we just got done with the season in Boise State where we effectively had two quarterbacks playing. Is that sort of the thought right now that you're going to have Tua and Jalen Hurts both playing, or is it just going to be a competition and one guy's going to win out and he's going to play the whole time until he gets benched again by Nick Saban in an important game perhaps?
Well, I don't think Nick Saban wants to go into a season with two quarterbacks, especially with the talent. They're losing a lot of talent, but They have a lot of really young talent. I mean, there were freshmen all over that field last night making big-time plays when it mattered most. I think what he's going to do is he's going to open up the competition in spring and fall camp. We're not going to know until kickoff of that first game of next season who the starting quarterback's going to be, because that's something that he likes to keep, you know, private within the team. But I really think that he's going to open it up. There is some speculation that Tua was maybe going to transfer if he didn't see any playing time after this season, just because, you know, Jalen Hurts is a true sophomore and Tua could play somewhere else. And as we saw last night, probably start just about any program in the country. But I think this shows that he's got a legitimate shot to be the starter. And I would be surprised unless Jalen Hurts took major steps forward in the ability to pass that Tua Tagovailoa is not the starter for Alabama next year. At least that's the takeaway right now. We got a whole summer. We got spring ball. There's a lot that can happen between now and that first game. But I really think Saban's going to open it up, and I know he wants to have the guy. He wants his quarterback to win over the team. He wants the players to rally around him, that quarterback to be the leader. And I really don't think we would see long-term a two-quarterback system in Alabama. Maybe the first couple games, he's done that before, like, all right, one quarterback will get one quarter, another will get the other, and the hot hand plays the rest of the way. But I think long-term, he knows he has to have one guy to play if they want to win another national championship.
The rule of thumb, which should always be the case, in the event of a tie between two players, the player with the easier name to pronounce gets the job. That's at least how I think it should always go, right? Come on, think of the broadcasters. Think of the broadcasters. And the print guys. I mean, how do you say that last name again?
Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa isn't exactly the easiest name to spell either, so I'm looking out for the print guys too. Chris Rankle, WIAT-TV in Birmingham, covers Alabama, coming off of the championship. Now, Nick Saban said after the game that he might have been as happy or happier after that game than he's ever been after any of his championship games. Why do you think that was the case?
Well, I said it going in. If he pulled this off and they were able to win this national championship, this may be his most impressive championship in his career when we look back at it, because this was a team that had a lot of deficiencies going into the year. You had to replace essentially your entire starting defense, and they're off to the NFL, and there were a lot of big-time draft picks. You had a lot of inexperienced guys coming in, and I remember looking at the beginning of the season saying, sure, the talent is there, but the experience might not be. They got a long way to go if they want to win the championship. And then to lose to your rival on the road to end the season, not have a chance to play for your conference championship, and get kind of backdoored into the playoffs, and everyone's starting to doubt you, and then you got to go against what everyone said was the number one team. By and far, they're going to repeat as champions. And then a Georgia team that won the SEC in Atlanta. On top of that, the injuries that this team had to go through. When I say they lost their linebacking core, I'm not kidding. They lost seven or eight guys at one point that were all injured and not playing. They had to bring in true freshmen. They had to move around guys. They had to, I think they trained a couple defensive ends to play outside linebacker at one point. I mean, this team hit adversity pretty much every step of the way, and it didn't stop. They had the month off between the Auburn game and the Sugar Bowl. And at the Sugar Bowl, they played their best game of the year, and they lost two more guys for the national championship. So I think Mack Wilson, the starting linebacker, told to me at media days before the title game that they kind of felt like they were cursed. Just when they were getting healthy, more guys are going out for the season. So I think the adversity that this team had to go through and just everything, it always seemed like the odds were stacked against them. And then the national championship game alone, down 13-0 at half with a true freshman who hasn't played significant minutes all season, comes in and wills you to win. I think this is probably – I think that you could credit a lot of this to coaching. Saban will never admit that. He says, oh, the players did it. The players did it. They wanted to win. But I think this all comes down to coaching, and this is probably his finest moment.
Chris Rankle covers Alabama, which means the ultimate question has to be asked. Nick Saban versus Bear Bryant. Go.
Well, Saban today had with the trophy presentation press conference said that in his mind, Bear Bryant's the greatest of all time because of what he was able to do on such a long-term success and with everything that he went through. Bear won with the wishbone. He won with the pro-style offense. He was just a winner. I would argue that right now Saban is doing the exact same thing as Bear Bryant did. He's won with the pro-style offenses. He's run with the spread offenses. He's been able to adjust his game in order to continue to win. The thing that Bear will always have over Saban is he's done it longer. Bear never went to the NFL and was a defensive coordinator and never did the head coach thing. You know, he was always, you know, Kentucky, Texas A&M, Alabama, and he was able to win each time there. So he's always going to have the wins on Saban. But I think it's important to remember that Saban, at least at this point, from what his comments were today, has me thinking he's not done for a while. So he has a chance to win at least a couple more championships. And I think when you look at it, even Bear Bryant was not able to win championships and win on the level that Nick Saban has done in the amount of time that he's done it. I mean, 5 championships in 9 years is a really, really remarkable and really, really hard to do. And I think it's one of those things when Saban retires and finally decides to hang it up, that we're going to have to take a long, hard look at the two of them and just see, is it, you know, do you want to go by the wins? Because then the wins, it'll go Bear Bryant. Do you want to go by the championships? I think Saban's going to have him at least one or two more before he decides to hang it up.
Well, Chris, appreciate the time. Thanks for lending your insider knowledge of Alabama. And get some rest, man. I think it's been a rough 24 hours for you, probably, trying to keep up with all that mess.
It's been long, and I drove back from Atlanta, got back to Birmingham about 45 minutes ago, went through the shower, now I got to go back into work and anchor some shows. So
the life, man.
No rest for the weary, at least for the next couple days.
All you do is cover championships. Chris, appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Chris Renkel, WIAT-TV in Alabama. Yeah, one title game after another. That's the team to cover.
I just want to know if Alabama is going to do anything to UCF, you know, real national champion, the actual champion, or if they're above that.
Yeah, they don't need to worry about no UCF or Alabama.
All right, Chris, all right, go. What's his name? Tua?
I'm not going to mess it up.
Come on.
I'm not confident enough.
This could be your four-time champion right here.
I'm not confident enough yet. I don't want to mess it up. Tua. I'm going to go with Tua.
Tua what? He's going to win two of those?
Got Tua championships? He got one. We'll have to build on that next year. I'll say this. Alabama, usually nameless, faceless players, right?
Yeah.
Don't really know them. Doesn't really matter. They rotate them in and out. Beginning of next year, they're going to have a storyline, right? As long as those two guys don't transfer.
Yeah, as long as one of them doesn't transfer, then yeah, that's your storyline.
You got a storyline. You got something to actually watch them for on the field. Hey, that's an improvement for everybody, right?
Yeah, and
it's
then
not like
the
usual Alabama.
The other storyline is, when will a Saban assistant beat Saban?
Yeah, well, one day.
At this point, it could be every game in the SEC will be him playing an assistant.
They're all from the Alabama tree at this point. He's going to lose one of them at some point. Boise State basketball team takes on Fresno State. Sports Radio, The Ticket, tonight on 93.1 FM. Tune in. You got Bob and Abe on the call. Pregame 8:30. Game 9 o'clock. Tip off from Fresno. Bronco men's hoops against the Bulldogs on Sports Radio, The Ticket, tonight starting at 8:30. Up next, all right, the championship game was great. At least the second half of it was. First half, we all had our jokes. But why I had a problem with the end? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. So many different angles from the national championship game. It's always good when we get a game like we got last night where there's so many different angles to attack from it. I'm still sorry, Bob, and Bob's back from Fresno. He went to shoot around. Hopefully the basketball team cheered you up a little bit. Did they at least have like a cake or something for you, a sympathy card, something?
No, I don't know that too many realized that I was as invested in the game last night. Pete Clark, the SID, did, and he was obviously gave me condolences. But you got to move on. I mean, I seem to think that things come in pairs. Boise State basketball lost big lead at half. Lost in overtime. Same weekend Georgia lost. The week before, big win at UNLV, wins at the Rose Bowl, and then the first weekend in December may have been my ultimate Oregon win on the last second shot by Alexis Williams, Mountain West Championship, and then Georgia beats Auburn. So some weekends you get it, some weekends you don't.
All right, can I ask you a question? You can decline to answer it if you don't want to answer it. But is your hotel room on the same floor as other members of the team? Like, I know when I travel.
I think so.
Gotcha.
I think so.
Because usually when I travel women's basketball, we're typically on the same floor. So if that were the case, if it were my Sixers in the NBA Finals, Game 7, oh boy, the whole team would have known I was invested in the game. Trust me.
You must be a louder fan than I am.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Whole team would have known how much I had invested if it were my Sixers in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So you're a lot more quiet, apparently, than I am watching a game like that. But, yeah, it didn't work out for you. That's unfortunate. Now, the one thing I wanted to say why I didn't like the ending.
Okay.
I think I'm in the minority with this being a very heavy college football town. I don't love college football overtime. I still don't. I don't think it's a reflection of the game. I don't think, like, you know, regular football is played on a 100-yard field with a time clock. College football overtime takes out some of the fundamental elements of football, and I can't 100% rock with that. And I think the game-winning play from this should show you how flawed that the college football overtime is. Because Alabama cannot run the play that they ran to win the championship if they didn't have a 13-yard sack the play before. The reason that a four-vert play would work is because you have more of the field to work with, thus the defense has to cover more of the field. When you get the ball positioned at the 25-yard line in overtime to start every drive, well, that takes away the 100-yard football field, thus changes the sport, in my opinion.
And another thing I think that made last night different, I don't know if they were confident in Anastasio or whatever his name is to make even a 30-yard field goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were looking at maybe having four downs, even though Georgia put a field goal on the board, and certainly they felt they had to pick a lot of yardage up. So I think on second down, they were looking for something big.
Yeah, it just shows that it's flawed. A go route is part of football. The defense has to be responsible for covering the entire part of the field. You cannot take away part of – You can't take away 75% of the field in overtime. That just, to me, doesn't seem real.
Okay, but how long are you willing to play? How long are you willing to play? If we're going, and I'm not talking about just for a national championship game where maybe you'd be willing to play longer.
Mm-hmm.
How long are you willing to play in the regular season? Are you going to say we're going to play 10 minutes and then it's a tie if you play the NFL rules? I mean, at least with the college rules, both teams do touch the ball. It's a similar chance for both sides. I don't have a problem with the college and the pro rules being different. I'm not so sure. I don't like the fact that it's different than the regular game, but I'm not so sure that it's not fairer than the regular game.
Yeah, I mean, you could say like penalty kicks are fair. Like each team has five kicks to try to get them into the goal. But that's not soccer. You're not deciding.
No,
you've graduated beyond what the sport is.
This is closer to regular football than penalty kicks are to soccer.
Yeah, but you're definitely stretching away from the game in both circumstances.
You are.
Like, again, Georgia.
I mean, like, I would be totally against putting a runner at second base in baseball to speed up play. Totally against
it. Yeah, because that's the same thing. You're really changing up the game. It's no longer football.
It's overtime.
In
a playoff game, you probably want to have a winner.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout the history of football, more years than until recently, ties were part of the game. What's wrong with the tie?
I'm with you.
Regular season game.
Especially in this
era. What's wrong with the tie? Because sometimes there's strategy. Do you want to play for a win or do you want to play for a tie?
Yeah, in the regular season, I'm not hating on ties for the regular season. Mm-hmm. Like, that can certainly happen, and that throws a whole different element on rankings. Well, if one team is undefeated, or one team is undefeated but has a tie and another team has one loss, then, yeah, you could view the team that hadn't lost the game, depending on where their tie was, who was against, and weight that against a loss for a team that was good against another team that was really good. That would throw a whole another wrench into our debates that we have every Monday and Tuesday throughout college football season about rankings. I am not anti-tie like a lot of people are, but when you get to the circumstance of a national championship, and you're a Georgia fan, you had back-to-back games where you saw overtime. You had the double overtime in the Rose Bowl. I don't think that's... Especially when you get to the playoffs now, that to me isn't the right way. It just feels wrong to me. It feels like penalty kicks, and I don't know how soccer can fix their issue because a score is so rare in their game that you literally could play for another hour and a half and not have another goal. So what are you supposed to do about that? But
so
for
do you,
football,
do you think that
you
hockey
could play.
When they take one player off the ice, do you think that cheapens the game?
probably not the best guy to have an opinion on that, but I do know in the playoffs, they don't take the guy off the field no more.
They do not.
They go regular, full 5-on-5 when you get to the playoff because they don't want to change the fundamental part of the game when you're deciding a champion. And I think there's something to be said for that. Could the college football change their overtime for the playoff versus what you have it for the regular season?
Boy, it's exciting, though. It's more exciting than the regular overtime. If you're talking about sheer, because every play, something like that could happen. So, did you, while I was out doing the shoot around with the team and getting Coach Rice for the pregame tonight, did you guys talk about the final rankings?
No, we didn't. We didn't really get into it. So we have a sports update coming up next. We could delve into the either early, way too early rankings or the postseason rankings. We could do both of those coming up next.
I have some thoughts on the final AP and coaches poll rankings with who was voted where and where Central Florida was. You can hit Dave and Buster's for the football playoffs. Register to win a three-day, two-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Watch every game you can at Dave and Buster's this playoff season and register every visit. You must be present on Sunday, February 4th with Sports Radio, the ticket for the big game to win the three-day, two-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. You also get a $300 credit at the exclusive MB Steakhouse and a pair of VIP concert passes at the joint at the Hard Rock. Join Caves and the Ticket Chick with Sports Radio, the ticket, Sunday, 2:30 for Minnesota and New Orleans. Again, up next in the sports update, where all the teams ended up in the polls, like anybody really cares and it matters, and also the way too early. Where does Boise State check in, at least at the start? That's next on Sports Radio, the ticket.
Ticket sports update with some Boise State basketball news. Boise State Broncos will end their two-game road trip tonight. They're taking on Fresno State. Last year, Boise State lost both games to Fresno State. The Broncos currently trail Nevada by one game in the Mountain West so far to start the year.
It'll be a very athletic game tonight. These two teams both get up and down the floor. I think turnovers are going to be a big factor. Try to limit them against a team that forces quite a few.
Well, the final AP and coaches poll for college football came out following Alabama's 26-23 win over Georgia in the national championship. Self-proclaimed national champ UCF finished 6th in the AP poll. They got 4 first-place votes there. 7th in the coaches poll. They got no first-place votes there. Boise State was 22nd in both polls, 1 spot behind USF. And fellow Group of Five and American team Memphis came in at 25 and 24 in the polls.
Well, I think, first of all, for Boise State, finishing in the top 25, winning the conference, winning a bowl game, I think thumbs up, double thumbs up to the season this year for Boise State. As far as if I was a voter, I think they got it right. I think I would have had Central Florida at number 6 behind the 4 teams that made the playoffs and Ohio State. Sorry if Central Florida doesn't like it. They can print their national championships, but I think the final polls got it right. I think Central Florida was number 6, and I will find it very interesting if Scott Frost, when he's the head coach at Nebraska, is a Big Ten champion with a couple of losses, and he's battling against a Group of Five that's undefeated to get in. I wonder what side of the argument he's going to be on there then.
I don't wonder. I know. He'll be on the side that gets his Nebraska team in there. That's not a wonder. It's a relationship of convenience. We all know that.
Right.
You believe whatever is convenient for your team at the time. Nobody has any real moral standards in college coaching. It's whatever benefits you at the current time. We all know this.
Correct.
So no mystery whatsoever for what he would think. I just kind of wish that UCF would be higher just for the sake of, you know, undefeated team. I still feel like should have a claim at a champion. There's something wrong with a sport if you can win all your games and not be in contention for a championship. I still feel like, you know, the fundamentals of sports tell you that if you win all your games, you should, in a way, have an avenue to a contention for a championship.
You know, one of the things that I saw out, and I kind of questioned just in my own mind, and you tell me if there's any basis to it. You know, they said Alabama did not win a division. That's not totally true. Alabama didn't get to play in the SEC championship, but they tied for the division championship, and based on the tiebreaker, they didn't get to move on. So, to me, that's not quite the same as that you didn't win a division.
That's true, I suppose. Like, the Boise State, for example, has had a couple of those situations, right, where they were tied with another team for the Mountain, but it's because of the tiebreaker rules. But we didn't say that Boise State won the Mountain that year.
No, we did not. But I'm just saying that Alabama, I think when you hear that and you think that, you think they got beat in the division. Yeah. They got tiebreakered in the division.
That's fair. Now, oh, Boise State note. It's funny because this was a year where we were worried for a good chunk of it that this would be a season that ends the ranking streak, right? That Boise State wouldn't be ranked at all. And what is it? I forget how many years in a row that they've been ranked. You probably know off the top of your head. And we thought that this could come to a close because of the start to the year that they had. And it turns out they finished the year being ranked.
Fantastic year. And again, it's September 2-2. 2-2 at the month of September. And looking at the way too early top 25s, Boise State in most of them. CBS has them 19th. ESPN has them 17th. Both the highest group of five team. USA Today not there. In fact, the top team I think USA Today had was our friend Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic. They had them in the top 25. And Sports Illustrated has Boise State checking in at 24. Stuart Mandel has the Broncos checking in at 18. So I think when the year starts next year, Boise State will probably be somewhere in that 15 to 25 range to begin the year.
So that's good news right there. It's going to be hyped. We're going to be excited about it. The expectations are going to be there. Brett Rippon's going to have the spotlight at the beginning of the season. And you should feel comfortable if you're a Boise State fan, right? I guess you never really feel comfortable. But you have a defense that you feel like you can rely on and an experienced quarterback. What more can you ask for? Experienced defense that's dependable and a four-year starter at quarterback. Most teams would sign up for that going into a season.
Well, yeah, no, I think Boise State's got an awful lot back. I mean, what would you say the biggest single need is? Big wide receiver?
Yeah, I'm about to say a playmaking
Somebody
receiver.
Somebody to step up there? What's that?
Playmaking receiver, no doubt. Yeah. You know, Cedric Wilson gone. Rippon can be an experienced quarterback all you want, but if nobody's open or no dependable right. receivers there, you have to rely on scheme quite a bit to get guys open. And that was the great thing about Cedric Wilson is that he can get open regardless of scheme.
Well, speaking of the national championship game, all eyes are on Alabama and what they're going to do with their quarterback controversy. Georgia was almost in a similar spot. Remember, at the start of the year, Jacob Eason, the number one rated quarterback from the 2015 recruiting class, was a starter. He got hurt in their game against Appalachian State. Jake Fromm took over, and the rest is history. Well, it was announced today, Eason expected to transfer to the University of Washington. He's from the Seattle area, and he had committed to play under Mark Richt, so he hasn't even committed to play under Kirby Smart. So Coach Pete might be getting a top quarterback recruit just because.
Well, and of course, Browning has another year left, so it will be a wide-open job, one would think, the year that Eason would be eligible.
Yeah, Eason will be competing with that the kid from Coeur d'Alene, who they just recruited this year. Him and Eason
right,
most likely,
saying,
yeah.
Right, if Browning holds this job the entire season next year, doesn't get hurt, somebody doesn't beat him out, it'll be a wide-open job the following season.
No quarterback is safe anymore, though. That's what the national championship game told you, right? No quarterback is safe. Boise State tried to tell you at the beginning of the year when they put in Kosar for Rippon, defending Mountain West first-team all-conference quarterback. No QB is safe. If you struggle in a half, you can be replaced, which would be an interesting trend because we treat that position with such kid gloves that if suddenly the trend throughout college football became, nah, if you're struggling, you're just as likely to be replaced as any other spot.
Do you think Hurts stays and Tua stays for spring ball? They compete, and do you think we have a winner? It sounded like listening to your interview with Chris Rankel. He doesn't think that Saban will split the quarterback job. He's going to go with one. Do you think whoever feels they're the non-winner coming out of spring ball is gone?
I think this is how Saban will play it. I don't think he'll give you a clear indication of who's the guy before fall.
Not give you, but do you think he'll give them?
I don't think he'll give them either. I think he wants to keep both. And he wants to keep both as long as possible. Although you could say that maybe you want to get rid of the distraction of a multi-quarterback potential ego thing. Ohio State had that a couple years ago where they had by far the most talented team in college football, but they had so many quarterbacks that kind of drove a wrench into their team. But I think Nick Saban would feel like he could manage it. So I think he would want both of them to be on his roster, so he's not going to give a clear indication on who's in front in that job. So my guess is that he'll keep this an open competition going into fall and that nobody would transfer unless one guy is just so drastically better than the next, where you can't even pretend that there's a controversy. And then in that case, which is from what I hear, more likely to be Tua, the guy who steps in front rather than Hurts, and then Hurts would transfer.
Well, I think Tua moves well enough that I don't think he's a running back like quarterback like Hurts, but I think he moves well enough. It's not like he's just going to sit in the pocket, where they're really, really different in that case. I think it's going to be fascinating moving forward. I don't think Alabama wins the game if they don't make the quarterback change. I think both of them obviously have their strengths of what they can do, and I think it's going to be fascinating for people to watch what Nick Saban does in a case maybe there's just too many good quarterbacks there. You know, I don't know whether somebody said to me, you think they can move Hurts to running back? I mean, I think Alabama's got enough good running backs as it is. It probably doesn't need Hurts there, but could he play another position? That's a question to be asked.
Could he play quarterback at Boise State? You never know, right? Well, if you watch it, hey, they worked so well with Montel Cozart, and that situation looked like it was so much fun. I want to come to Boise State and play down the line. Hey, you never know, right? Not the most unrealistic.
I think the biggest thing when you're talking about an underclassman, much like Eason going from Georgia to Washington, is you're not a grad transfer, so you're not going immediately. So wherever you go, if you decide to transfer, you're going to have to sit out, and if you're going to do it, from Eason's perspective or from Hurts' perspective, after the sophomore year and you have not registered is the perfect year, because you still have 2 years left to be the quarterback for whatever the team was. I'm kind of surprised, as little as they played him, I'm kind of surprised that Alabama didn't redshirt Tua, was my guess.
Well, speaking of quarterbacks, one just a quick thing to wrap up the sports update. It was announced today by the Spiral Tropical Bowl that Montel Cozart will be participating in the game. Cozart, of course, played for Boise State the year split time with Brett Rypien, and he'll become the fourth Bronco to participate in the game in the first since a trio, including Shane Williams Rhode, played in the first Spiral Tropical Bowl all the way back in 2015.
I believe the game's at Daytona Beach, right?
Yes.
So, again, nice honor for Montel, chance to showcase yourself in front of some scouts. So, all of the best to Montel Cozart. The NFL playoffs and Super Bowl are always on Sports Radio The Ticket. Tune in Saturday at 2:30 as the Falcons will go to Philadelphia. And then it'll be followed by the Titans going to New England to face the Patriots. Then on Sunday, we've got a doubleheader as well. Earlier start, 11 a.m., Jacksonville at Pittsburgh, followed by Minnesota hosting New Orleans. If you're listening to the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl, you're listening to Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. We've got basketball tonight right here on The Ticket. Boise State taking on Fresno State. We'll be back to preview that game next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. And this segment is brought to you by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, and accessories. And it's located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Basketball this week, Chris, goes to tonight, Tuesday night, road game at Fresno State. Women's team will be at home tomorrow against Fresno State. And I think this is a big game tonight for the Broncos. 13-3 against Fresno State, 12-5. Broncos with the edge right now, 3-1 to Fresno State's 2-2. But if your goal is to get in the NCAA tournament as an at-large, and your goal is to win the Mountain West, you need to split this two-game road trip after losing in the second half and an overtime to Wyoming. You're now a game in the loss column right now behind Nevada. Nevada, the only unbeaten team at 4-0. Boise State sits at 3-1, tied with maybe the surprise of the year, Utah State at 3-1 in the conference. So I think it's a big game for Boise State, a game that they need to get at Fresno State, a place that they've lost their last three, and a place that they have not fared very well overall in the history of the series. Fresno State has won 13 out of the 19 games played in California. Overall, the series favors Boise State 21-19, so that means the Broncos have done very well in Boise.
Yeah, this is big. You don't want to make one loss turn into two. You mentioned before the road trip started that Fresno was a tougher road test versus Wyoming. You already saw what happened against Wyoming. And Boise State, you lose a 16-point lead at halftime. You feel bad about it. And you're with them, you're around them, so you know how they've handled that loss better than probably anybody else. So you would know whether they're in a position to where they just can't wait to take the court and avenge what happened in that second half, or are they a little bit less confident than they were before that game against Wyoming, and you let the Fresno State Bulldogs come up and clip you.
I think Boise State had a good shoot-around today. I was there. They were focused. They were ready to play. And I think sometimes the best thing in the sport of basketball is to be able to take the floor again. There are so many highs and lows. And I think one of the things you need to do in basketball is not get too excited when you have a win like, say, the Oregon game where you win a half-court shot. You haven't gotten to the Final Four with that win. And by the same token, a loss at Wyoming, you don't want to let turn into to two losses. So you kind of need to stay on a little bit of an even keel. This is a team that is very quick. They shoot the ball well from three. They pressure you. They get the ball up and down the floor. Kind of a mirror image of Boise State. They out-rebound opponents. They've done it 14 out of 17 times this season. And when they have done it, they are 12-2. So Boise State's going to have to hit the glass. I think Boise State's going to have to be a little bit more careful with the basketball against Fresno because their guards do get out and pressure you. And I think this is going to be a tough game tonight. But I think certainly if the Boise State team that has played seven of the eight halves so far in the Mountain West, if those teams show up, I think Boise State gets this one done. But I think it will be a hard game tonight.
Yeah, this is the only meeting again against Fresno. San Jose is the other team where Boise State only plays them once. Now, this is something that I don't get with women's basketball. We are never in a position to where you have the back-to-back road games where you stay on the same trip. You don't come back home in between because of the Saturday-Tuesday aspect of it. I think they elected to stay on the road with this. So what does that do to the team? Is there value in having this stretch where you spend a lot of time together on the road like that?
Well, I think the biggest value in this trip is the two locations that they gave them back-to-back. Normally, they schedule games for Wednesday and Saturday, and then occasionally they move a TV game to Tuesday or to Sunday. Boise State has no Sunday games on their schedule this year. What it does is, because they have budget usually for about four charters, four legs of a charter, and they chose to use two of them for this trip. Going to Laramie, you've been there, Chris, is not the easiest trip. If you choose to go commercial, you fly to Denver, and then you bus 2.5 to 3 hours north to Laramie, and then obviously you've got to bus that back. So by using one of them to Laramie, that means you avoid that. And then when you go to Fresno, you can't get into Fresno without changing planes, so they opted to use another one getting to Fresno right away. So I think they had a very good rest and recovery day on Sunday, practiced yesterday hard, and then are ready to go today. Where if you came back with the game at 6 o'clock, you would have been busing back from Laramie to Denver. You'd be out Sunday morning. You'd come back for, what, half a day on Sunday, mm-hmm. and then you'd be out again Monday with a Tuesday night game. You'd be spending, you know, probably flying to San Francisco, sitting there for an hour, hour and a half, and then transferring, and who knows if you get any delays. So I think coming here right away was definitely a smart move for Boise State basketball.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of time traveled if you decided to go the commercial route with this. So it seems like it's good strategy. Now, I'm on ESPN.com looking at the matchup preview, like I like to do for every Boise mm-hmm. State game. And the one thing I do go to is look at the pick center, and they have usually the spread there. Yeah, Boise State is a 4-point underdog. Does that feel right to you?
They're the home team. I think it's going to be a close game. And what is home team usually worth? Three?
Yeah, roughly. Say. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, pretty close.
Okay.
Pretty close. I would expect this game to be one of those that goes right down to the wire tonight, much like the way that a Wyoming game ended up. Not necessarily somebody's going to be ahead by 16, somebody's going to make a comeback. But I think it's going to be a tight game. I think Fresno State has some talent. They're missing Paul Watson, who graduated from last year. He was one of their better players, one of their better scorers. And Karachi Edo was also on the team for part of last year. He was more of a Charles Barkley kind of guy, thicker, shorter, but played taller than he was. A new player for Fresno State was this year is Ray Bowles, a grad transfer from the University of Pacific, and he's been averaging about 11 points a game. But the guys to watch, Deshaun Taylor, 19 points a game. Jamel Taylor, no relation, he averages 11, shoots 43% from three-point range, and another guard, Jerron Hopkins, 11 points for him, 5 rebounds. So they've got a very athletic team, not an overly big team. Their biggest guy this year goes only at 6'8", but this is a team that goes up and down the floor and kind of similar to Boise State in that respect.
All right, my thing to watch for this game, I'm going to see how Zach Haney continues to play. I mean, he's in a pretty good stretch right now. Perhaps the best stretch he's had with Boise State. Last four games, all in double figures. His minutes are well over 20, approaching the mid-20s. The last game against Wyoming, 7 of 9 from the floor, and including his ability to step out and hit a three. He had a double-double in this stretch against UNLV. So I think Zach Haney, if he continues to be a reliable big for Boise State, that's just another dynamic. So I want to see if he can keep this up. That's probably where I'm looking at today.
And he's probably going to be the only real true big man on the floor tonight. He's pretty athletic. In conference play, averaging 12 points, 8 rebounds, shooting 63% from the floor. I don't believe there is a most improved player in the Mountain West award, but for Boise State's team, my money's with Zach. I know that there's been improvement for guys like Jessup and Dickinson and Hobbs, but last year, Haney was basically trading off in a three-way rotation with George and Wacker as well as himself. This year, he's clearly the best big guy for Boise State. He started all 16 games. Zach Haney right now playing as well as he's played in his entire career, and he's a junior.
Yeah, so hopefully he can keep that up. Set those good screens, too, because he's one of his better skills, too, is to set screens. All right, so he's at 8:30 pregame, 9 o'clock tip-off. Bob and Abe on the call from Fresno State, and then we can get you back here in time to give us a preview of that Friday game against San Diego State, because that schedule does not get any easier.
No, it does not. I think there's a lot of really good teams in the Mountain West. I don't know that there's great, but there's a lot of good teams, and Saturday night, 8 o'clock, will be a good game with San Diego State. That'll do it. Chris, you and Fish tomorrow. I'll check in from the airport. And Boise State basketball tonight at 8:30 right here on Sports Radio. The Ticket, Dave Harbison, Mike Prater, coming up next as Idaho Sports Talk continues.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.